Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Dan McNeil, Danny Parkins.
Here we go!
Afternoons on the Score.
Quentin Nelson from Notre Dame, sixth overall pick. He basically eats a linebacker, and this is the primal scream that you hear as he goes about his business. That is him from snap to impact. Screaming.
Yeah, and when you're on your back looking up at him, you don't feel like you belong.
Welcome to Big Leagues, Hayseed. Next time, don't stand on the tracks when the train's coming through.
His teammates from Notre Dame say he does it every play, that he screams like that on every play.
Something primal. Something that you can scream out during intercourse.
You got a war face? Now let me see your war face. You didn't convince me. Let me see your real war face. You don't scare me. Work on it.
That's the kind of guy you want to have that mic going all the time and share that with people, because that's capturing the raw emotion and vigilante form of athleticism.
Hey, Quentin, what's up, man? Hey, you fired up?
Lock and load.
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons 1 to 6 on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago's sports station.
We've had some audio gold recently.
Yeah, that was a nice overdub there. Yes, audio gold is what we live for.
It's an audio medium. It helps.
Yep, I got that.
Yeah? Thought so?
They taught me, yes.
Yeah, no, I get the same thing. This hour on The Score brought to you by Web Chevy. Searching for a great deal on Chevys in Chicago? Visit Web Chevy in Plainfield or Oak Lawn. Eli directed me to J.J. Stankovic from NBC Sports Chicago on Twitter. The Bears have already outscored last year's Bears.
Yeah, I'm not surprised to hear that. 9 games into the season.
That's incredible. 9 games in.
That's beautiful.
That's coaching.
This is,
that's progress.
Yes, it is. It's coaching and it's executing what the coaching staff has installed, and it's having guys make plays. And they've got a bunch of them this year they didn't have, and it's been a lot more fun to watch. And I say, allow yourself to be proud of this team. They've earned that much trust. If they get popped this weekend and look bad in doing so, then go ahead and go back to being a cynical Bears fan. I certainly understand that, because I've been one for many years and I'm exhausted from it. It's so much more fun to say nice things about people and to be happy because they're moving in the right direction. And they are, with Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy.
And so much of this is about expectations, right? Like, if the guy who gets coach of the year in most sports is usually the coach who exceeds expectations the most. Like, it wasn't Phil Jackson every year. It's not Bill Belichick every year. It's whoever exceeds expectation the most. And I'm not saying Matt Nagy will get coach of the year. Maybe he will. Maybe he won't. But after 4 last place finishes, just being 5-3 and relevant and you're favored over
6
the Vikings.
Now,
yeah, right. Sorry. And then you're going to be favored over the Lions. It's like, man, that's 5 weeks in a row where the Bears have been favored over their opponent.
Yeah. This is stuff that is unfamiliar with some young Bears fans. Haven't gone through something like this, and maybe none of us ever have, because offensively they're playing at a clip that's unprecedented in the history of the franchise. And that leads me to our show pod, Parkins.
Yes.
We started a show pod back in January, and it has moved to the positive side. But we need to get working at it, because we have a deadline. If we want to go to the Pro Bowl in Orlando this year, I think we need to double what we have now, and that would be doable, because there's going to be a bunch of Bears going to the Pro Bowl unless they're busy that following week in Atlanta.
Right. So if they're playing in the Super Bowl, they're pulling out.
Yeah. You got but at least four of them on defense going, right? Akeem Hicks is going to the Pro Bowl. Khalil Mack is going. Roquan Smith leads one of the NFL's best defensive teams in solo tackles. He doesn't have the most overall. He's got the most solos on the Bears.
And then Kyle Fuller.
And I suspect Tariq Cohen will be an NFC specialist. There's only one guy in the league averaging more per punt return in the NFC than Cohen is, and Cohen is a much more valuable player offensively. He has many highlight reel, you know, touchdowns and outstanding plays. He's going to the Pro Bowl.
I don't know about any other offensive players. Robinson missing a couple of games is probably going to hurt his case. There's a lot of good tight ends in the NFL for Burton.
What about the quarterback?
I'll be very surprised.
Don't be. Because one of them's going to be – one of the guys who will be voted as one of the top three players will be unavailable because he'll be playing in the Super Bowl the following week. That's likely either Breeze or Goff. If we had to bet on which team wins the NFC today, those would be the two favorites.
Right. Then the other guy goes to the Pro Bowl. But
if he wants to. A lot of times guys who've been there already a few times don't want to play, and that might open. That's how Jay Cutler got to his one and only Pro Bowl in his last year with the Broncos.
No, mediocre quarterbacks have made Pro Bowls before. Jay Cutler, Matt Castle, Vince Young, they all have a Pro Bowl on their resume. So it's absolutely possible that he gets there on a technicality, but Matt Ryan's having a pretty big statistical season. Rodgers has name recognition over him. Kirk Cousins would be another guy that he'd... I will be very surprised if Mitch makes the Pro Bowl.
I think that there isn't a... Well, I will be,
I hope he makes it. That'd be
but
incredible. But
he's going to get some consideration. And again, a lot of it swings on how many guys who've been there already want to be there. Part of me says, let's hang on to that money and do something with it next year, because this is the third and final year of the NFL's contract with the city of Orlando. There's no destination as of yet decided for the 2020 Pro Bowl.
Oh.
And if it goes back to the island, that's where we need to be focusing our energies on going back to Hawaii. Because I broadcast from Pro Bowl week twice when it was in Honolulu. And that's living. And it is fish in a barrel compared to the Super Bowl, because there are no media. There's no one to compete with. And if you do your show poolside at the NFC Hotel, hey, there walks Lance Briggs. Let's put the headset on him, or any of the Hall of Famers the NFL brings out there for bells and whistles. It's a real easy home run guest week.
Mac, you do not need to sell me on going to Hawaii for the Pro Bowl. Now, I assume
for programming purposes, of course.
Of course. It would not be for golf and for you to make your ninth trip to Hawaii. That would not be the reason we're doing it. I assume the budget of Hawaii is a little bit higher than Orlando.
Yeah, it is. That's why I started with Orlando.
Okay. So it's like, do we want to take the trip in hand and then worry about building it back up in time for Hawaii? Or do we want to just save the money now and risk losing it all
through
gambling
and
still maybe not being able to afford Hawaii, which we don't even know is next year?
Right, we don't.
It's real.
Yeah, it could be in Dallas at AT&T Stadium. I'm sure Jerry would love to have it there.
Put it back. I mean, we know it's going back to Hawaii eventually.
I would think so. It was such a devastating blow to the economy. That was by miles their biggest week of the year for tourism. I mean, only 30,000, 40,000 people actually go to the game, but they estimate 100,000 visitors to the island of Oahu for Pro Bowl week. So,
wow. Well, I am concerned about their economy.
Yeah, it's... Well,
I'm just saying, I mean, I'd love to contribute. I'd love to do my part to
not
help.
Not all about us.
I'd love to help my Miami. I'd love to help out Honolulu.
Yeah, Olin Krutze hates your people if you're listening.
That's
you
not what
right
it
here.
Is.
Yeah.
It's just, I just
don't really care about those Hawaiians.
Well, the idea
of have a pineapple and be happy.
Of selling it to management. Like, you know what we got to do? We got to help Hawaii with their
that's
economy.
Not the sell.
It's going to just kind of be like, well, listen, that's why the NFL needs to go back. It doesn't strike me that the NFL is going to care all that much.
Daniel, I guess my point is the Chamber of Commerce there will do everything it can to get the Pro Bowl back because it meant a lot to them.
The only Pro Bowl I've been to was when they did it in Phoenix the week before the Super Bowl, and they
God, I don't even remember it being in Phoenix.
It was in 20 whenever the last Super Bowl in Phoenix was, 2014, I want to say. The one Super Bowl Radio Row I did.
Did you get the same thing on Mac, on that one, Mac? The last Pro Bowl in Phoenix. This is when they had it in Phoenix the last time. Yeah,
the last Super Bowl in Phoenix. Yeah, you're right. I think it was 2014. Might have been 2015. Only time I did Radio Row, we flew in Sunday morning. The Pro Bowl was Sunday night, and then we did the full week of shows from Radio Row leading up to the Super Bowl. The NFL explored the idea of doing that to get people in there earlier for Super Bowl week, but the players hated it. Because they're like, we can go to the Super Bowl city for Super Bowl parties. We want to do two trips, and we want to go somewhere cool like Hawaii. So there's also been more guys pull out of Pro Bowls when it hasn't been in Hawaii.
Yeah, that's a nice sweetener for their families. And, you know, guys, no matter how much money they earn or how much money they make, they're not always hand in hand.
Yeah.
People like free stuff. And young professional athletes, the idea of getting their family flown first class and staying in first class accommodations for a week is very enticing. And until they've done it, so now Drew Brees goes every time he's offered, I believe. Every time he gets the opportunity.
Big fan of the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, he'll put the fleur-de-lis on and go out there in his blue jersey and throw touchdown passes. But not all of them feel that way.
What do you think we need, 5Gs? We're not at that in the show pod.
No, but we can get there in a year. We can't probably in a month. And getting there in a year would require a lot more discipline than we've demonstrated thus far.
Yeah, you think? Yeah. We're doing a bunch of action plays in the NFL.
I think 10 would do it. I think 10 for sure would do it.
10,000 sends the show to the Pro Bowl in Hawaii.
And the first time we took a show there, we got a title sponsor for $10,000, so that covered things.
I've gone on runs like that before.
I can do that.
Maybe with a bankroll. You play, optimum conditions, maybe.
You can play in the golf pro game. You know, yeah, definitely could do that.
Yeah, I know a game up in Binghamton. Are you sure? Binghamton's five hours each way.
Yeah. City workers, right?
Yeah, municipal workers.
That's what he said.
Yeah, municipal work.
Worm.
Idiot, they work for the state, not the city.
It really was, though, a festival of NFL guest mania.
I'm sure.
There's Bruce Smith, Hall of Fame-bound defensive end of the four-time AFC champion Buffalo Bills, and he's walking right by. There's left tackle Orlando Pace of the St. Louis Rams. And, you know, there's going to be a bunch of Bears there this year.
Yeah.
So I think it makes sense for us to camp out at the NFC Hotel, unless we go to the Super Bowl in Atlanta, which we've just started to talk about.
That's what I was thinking, too. Could we double dip it? Could we go from Orlando to Atlanta? Go to the Pro Bowl, do the Friday show before the Pro Bowl, maybe the Thursday-Friday show before the Pro Bowl, stay in Orlando for the game, and then take the short flight from Orlando to Atlanta, and then
do a
week of shows from Radio Row.
If the Bears are there, a week of shows for sure, but if they're not there, it probably would be out of the realm of reason to say, yeah, we're 3 days on the front end of it in Florida, and then, yeah, 6 straight days in Atlanta. I don't think that would fly.
Dream big.
We have before and we've pulled it off a few times.
Yeah, and by the way, if we're contributing our own pot, we got Giannis's MVP. That's in the bag. Let's spend that money right now. That's a winner. We just need to come up with a few $1,000 between now and
then.
That's
all. But it's nice to have Bears going to the Pro Bowl. Maybe that'll resurrect an interest in the game. I don't know.
I doubt it.
Probably not. What I like about the game is it's basically a talk show. It's NFL guys talking about the NFL. You don't have to watch the game part of it. They're interviewing people the entire time.
I was blown away by how engaged the fans were in Phoenix.
Yeah.
Because it's so much cheaper if you're in the host city. Like, yeah, I'll go to the Pro Bowl. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be able to afford going to the Super Bowl. They sold the thing out, and there was like a legitimate buzz in the stadium. I thought
how many Bears were there your Super Bowl year? Our Pro Bowl year. Just two?
Yeah.
Kyle Long?
Kyle Long was definitely there.
Martellus Bennett?
No. Who was it in 2014? I don't even remember what year I was in Phoenix, much less what
was
players
that a,
were in
was
the
that
game.
A Tim Jennings Super Pro Bowl?
I don't believe it was a Tim Jennings Pro Bowl. I just remember.
I'll never forget my first Bear in the Pro Bowl when I went for the first time in the winter of 2000. Kick returner Glenn Milburn was there to represent our fine city.
Did you get the jersey?
No, I did not.
Okay. I know you had a big jersey collection. That'd be a good story behind that
one. Just what a fat guy needs, a Glenn Milburn jersey.
Brian Billick is going to join us. I don't know what you're interested in talking to him about, but...
His dishwasher.
Okay, well, we'll get Brian Billick on and start there on the Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Oh, what's that? Are you kidding me?
Brian Billick.
They want a physical game. They think that's the game they want. We got to show them they picked wrong.
Super Bowl winning head coach.
The Baltimore defense, Brian Billick. That has been the difference in this game.
NFL Network contributor.
Mitch Trubisky is making improvements. You always hear the quarterbacks refer to the idea that the game is slowing down for them. And I think the game will begin to slow down for Mitch Trubisky.
Brian Billick.
Look, somebody!
Parkins on 670 The Score.
In our conversation with Brian Billick, brought to you by Cassidy Tire and Service from the NFL Network. Brian Billick now with us, McNeil and Parkins on The Score. How's it going, Brian?
Doing great.
Good to have you on board, Brian. Bears just picking him up and knocking him down one at a time, stacking victories, and it feels good from a fan's perspective. It really does. I mean, what did you like about what you saw from our guys against the Lions Sunday?
Well, like you said, just the next game, the next improvement. I'm doing a piece tomorrow on my show on the NFL Network. You know, about a month ago after the Miami game, I showed with Mitch Trubisky as well as he had played. He had missed three or four throws that I felt like he was going to start to make, and that's exactly what he's done. I'm showing a couple clips where some throws that he maybe didn't make earlier that he's willing to put the ball in some places. You know, before it was, don't want to turn the ball over, playing good defense. But he's taking more chances, but because delivering, because he's willing to, he sees that he can put the ball in some tighter areas, and he's making those kind of throws.
Who is your comp for Mitch Trubisky?
Oh, boy, that's a good question. You know, I think because of, although he certainly is running around and his ability to use some legs, I kind of made the comp more that he has the potential to be a little, you know, maybe even a Ben Roethlisberger-like in terms of his size to be able to shrug off the tackle, buy a little bit of time, and I think he'll mature that way. And he's a guy that I think could get a lot of productivity out of fewer throws. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger is amazing. He can be 21 of 27, only 27, but 450 yards, you know, and three touchdowns. You know, those kind of numbers where it doesn't have to be that 35-40 throw game.
Would it concern you if your quarterback were your most effective ball carrier?
Well, all that means is it's a good thing in terms of productivity they can have. You know, just look at Cam Newton and what he's doing with McCaffrey in the backfield in Carolina. Yeah, you'd like that compliment, and you don't want him to be your only running threat. That's a big part of it as well. So, yeah, you'd like to see a little bit more consistent. Just for the sheer number of, you don't want him to take too many hits.
Can you go to the Super Bowl without an improved running game if you're the Bears?
Oh, boy. You better be awfully efficient in the passing game. Certainly the defense is going to be good enough. But where it's going to cost you on that route between here and the Super Bowl, particularly, is in the red zone. You know, at some point in the red zone, you got to be able to take that shot in the end zone. You got to have yards after the catch from an efficiency standpoint. But at some point, you got to be able to run the ball in the red zone when they put the eight-man front on the field to close out a game so you don't have to have your quarterback thrown all the time.
Brian, we've seen a play that didn't get run this year with Mitch Trubisky and Chase Daniel both on the field. We've seen Eddie Jackson on offense a couple of times. It made the Lions call a timeout. It was Eddie Jackson and Bryce Callahan were out there. What is the point of coaches installing those plays? Is it more for their team and to liven it up? Is it to confuse other coaches and put it on film? What's the end goal with these trickeration plays that we're seeing a lot of?
Yeah, both of them, in terms of the sense that, yes, a team does, depending upon how much you want to use it, you force a team to use prep time during the week to get ready for it. Even if it's not a whole lot, you've got to cover it with your team. But also it does, and it's interesting that you would bring that up because you do kind of – it's a change-up. The players enjoy it. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a fun thing to do, and there's nothing wrong with that.
What's the goofiest thing you ever did, whether it's with the Ravens or with the Vikings as an assistant? What's is somebody from the defense, maybe on the offensive side, anything?
Wow. I try not to be too goofy.
Mm-hmm. You ever let Tony Siragusa go out in a pattern?
That would have been fun. Now, you know, we do some direct snap stuff and some fake, like the play is stopped and the quarterback walking off. You know, you don't get real crazy with that. But now everybody, you know, you look in New Orleans, what they're doing with Taysom Hill. You know, and this guy's a legitimate. He's a guy that's got legitimate throwing skills. He's a Tim Tebow, but can actually throw. And this is going to get interesting down there when you got a guy like that. I see in Baltimore, they're talking about maybe Lamar Jackson even starting now because Joe Flacco's a little hurt. So you're seeing a higher influence of these guys coming into the league.
Brian, have you noticed any trends around the league of offenses like the Bears, the Chiefs, Eagles that do a lot of the, you know, horizontal, the motions and all that, where they struggle in short yardage?
Yeah, at some point you'd like to, you know, just be able to get downhill and punch it in on a short yardage. You know, I've always marveled at people that'll get into the eye. You got a third and one, and you put the running back 6 yards back and try to get him started downhill. Same way. You know, the vertical, you know, the jet sweep and that kind of stuff on third down can be fun. It can be useful, but that's a long way to go to get short yardage. So, you know, you got to pick your spots with it. You talk about the presence of a good physical running back. At some point, you'd like to be able to get downhill when you have to.
Do you think it's a lack of actually practicing it, or like, why are the two correlated?
Well, it depends on a team's going to play it, and it doesn't take much for a jet sweep, wide play, trick play to work. All it takes is a defensive end that doesn't keep integrity up the field or comes crashing down inside. And it doesn't take much for that plane to get blown up when, you know, the guard's trying to jump up to the second level and the guy jumps outside or the defensive end. You know, all of a sudden it can look real bad, too, when one player kind of whiffs on his assignment.
Brian, the Bears have the Vikings Sunday night. Bears are slight favorites. Finally busted that divisional losing streak at 10 with their win over the Lions this past week. Are the Vikings, in your mind, clearly still the class of the division, or are the Bears flirting with them?
Well, this is a big game because you got to hold serve at home. Clearly, for validation, the Bears have got to beat the Vikings at home. But to do so, I think the Bears are looking for that validation that, yes, we are that team in the division now. You got to hold serve at home. And this would go a long way for making that statement that, yes, we are the team in the NFC North.
What's the toughest thing about the Vikings?
You know, their defense seems to have gotten its stride again. You know, they're awful tough to run against, even with a standard box. They don't have to load the box up. They can do enough things on the zone on the back end, but bring some zone blitzes. Harrison Smith is the real deal. They're just a good, solid defense. And Kirk Cousins seems to be playing to the strength of, I know we're playing good defense, we're getting the run the ball better. Kirk Cousins is having a great year as well. They're just very balanced on both sides of the ball.
We were talking yesterday about those teams that are just below that level of the Rams and Saints in the NFC, and we have to acknowledge the leader in the NFC East because one does exist, and it's the Redskins. You're on the Beltway, and I commented yesterday, I wonder if the people in Washington feel like the people do here about them, and that is 6-3, and, you know, are the Redskins a good club?
You know, when you say that out loud, the first reaction of most people is, really? Redskins are 6-3? Because they've shown some signs of being pretty darn good. And then they have that head scratching. How did that happen? You know, how did they lose? That's the thing they've got to get over, even to have confidence in themselves. And it helps that you're in a division that absolutely sucks. I mean, I don't know where. And Philadelphia is now, you know, I do a show in Philadelphia every week, and you got to kind of talk them off the ledge every week, but now it's harder to do because it's not looking real good.
You think they should be on the ledge?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, to end your misery. But Washington, you know, obviously, I don't think if most people, if you were to ask even the layperson or the informed NFL fan, going, okay, what do you think the Redskins' record is? You know, maybe 5-4, maybe 400 or 500 at 4-4, something like that. I think to hear that they're 6-3, a little like the Chargers. You know, when you look at the Chargers, they're a legitimate team now, but they kind of go under the radar, and I don't think a lot of people recognize they're as good as they are.
Talking to Super Bowl champion coach Brian Billick from the NFL Network on The Score, what's the worst playing condition field that you ever played on?
Well, it was that Hard Knocks game. You remember we went into Philly, and we ended up calling the game. They had made the transition from baseball game. This is in the old vet now. And there were gaps, and my players just basically refused to play. So we ended up having to call the game. In a preseason game, it was the year that we did Hard Knocks, and that was, you know, that's the worst that I've ever seen. I mean, it was just physically unsafe to play.
Yeah, that field had zippers in several spots. I remember the Bears had a wideout named Wendell Davis who blew out both of his patella tendons on the same play, just trying to jump off of that awful turf.
And there were grooves in that. The best thing about that one, the most amazing, is, you know, so Andy and I get together, and, hey, our players are freaked. There's no way we can do this. There's no way they can prepare it. So Mr. Lurie comes down, David Modell comes down, and we go into the officials' room because the officials made it very clear. We cannot stop a game. We can suspend it temporarily, but it takes the league to cancel a game. So we go into the officials' room, and they have this manual, you know, that they take with them, and they have. So we open this page, and there's like five numbers, league numbers. We call all five numbers, no answer. It's like, do they know we're playing? You know. Finally, Mr. Lurie stepped in and said, look, it's my responsibility. I'll take it. We're canceling the game. But I always thought that was amazing. We couldn't get a hold of anybody in the league office on a game.
Sounds like the NHL.
That is crazy. Well, because Adam Schefter just reported, if Monday night's game is played in Mexico City, a number of Rams and Chiefs players are now strongly considering not playing in the game on the messy surface. Quote, it's not fair to risk our health, end quote, one prominent player said today.
Yeah, I've heard that they have concerns. Who imagine the league doesn't have and get their guys down there to get it sorted out. But that's a fair observation. Like I said, that field in Philly, you couldn't put players on it. Once they reach that point where they were, when it sounds like the Rams and Chiefs players are saying, boy, it's hard to continue on with that because then the players just get freaked.
Thank you, Brian.
All right, sounds good.
Talk next week.
That's Brian Billick from the NFL Network, the segment brought to you by Spot Hero. And finally, here's a way you can save time parking. Use Spot Hero anytime you park. First-time users can enter the promo code SMART for $10 off. Spot Hero, park smarter. What a disgrace.
Kind of embarrassing. A league as powerful as the NFL has not addressed this and did not take the appropriate amount of time to prepare a playing surface for two teams punctuating week 11 of the season. It doesn't make any sense.
Could you imagine, though, like, you've got prominent players on two teams with Super Bowl aspirations, and they're worried about their health playing in a game that's been scheduled in Mexico City all year.
Players are far more sensitive to playing surfaces than we as fans often are made aware.
Sure, and it's their livelihood.
There was a situation when they played the first game in the new Soldier Field. There was discussion in the offices of the top brass of the Green Bay Packers for opening night to lift the lid on the season, whether the Packers were going to play or not. They were that concerned about the playing surface at New Soldier Field. What would that be? 0-2?
Yeah.
I think 0-1 was the year in Champaign, I remember correctly. 0-2. They were actually in conversation. Is this field playable? Because they weren't sure it was. There was some rain, and there was obviously a brand new field put down.
It's such an embarrassment.
It is.
Field turf.
Yes.
I don't get it.
It's simple. Right? You don't have to worry about water tables. You don't have to worry about water.
Is there some argument on behalf of grass? Is there like a grass lobby?
Injuries is what the Bears always have said, even though they say they have data or data that
data or data
backs that assertion. I don't. I've never seen. I've never asked for it.
But they've gotten so good with the field turf,
right?
Like you walk on it, it feels like grass. Yeah, I'm no expert. But.
Yeah, the little rubber pellets might get in your eye every now and again, but to me, that if that's the high end of the risk, then the rewards way outweigh it.
And you don't even see that much anymore. Like it's you know, you don't see like that it flying up as much. I'm sure it's possible. And there was the bowl game. What bowl game was it last year where the turf got ripped? And they had to, like, send the guy on the field with a shovel, and, like a construction crew came out into one of the end zones because the field turf, like, got ripped. It was Ohio State or Georgia.
Big Ten Championship, Ohio State.
Big Ten Championship. Yeah, last season. It was, like,
That's
I watched that game. I don't remember that.
That was crazy because they were guys just like, I don't even know what they were doing, like throwing all those rubber pellets in there. It was ridiculous. They were doing surgery on the end zone. But
I was busy falling in love with Denzel Ward.
Take like 20 minutes, something like that, to repair the end zone?
Yeah, and they had one guy doing it. I was like, can someone help my man out? Like, it was ridiculous.
About a half a dozen years ago when Northwestern and Illinois played at Wrigley Field, and they decided the day before the game, there's not enough room in this end zone here. We don't want anybody running into the brick, so let's have them go the same way all day.
Really made the game feel special, didn't it? Wow, these are big-time teams.
That was a blowout as well, if I remember it right. It was a blowout, and okay.
Texter says soccer rules at Soldier Field mean they have to keep it grass.
See, that's what happens when you don't own your NFL stadium. But I'm being positive on the Bears. I don't want to think about that as being such a negative because it is one. That stadium drives me bananas.
Just whatever the best field turf in the game is.
Yes, they can't play soccer on the best field turf, really?
Well, just buy it because people are like, oh, the pellets will still come up and there's different levels of quality in field turf. This is the NFL.
Spare no expense.
There's 32 teams, 32 or less than 32 stadiums. Just get the best field turf for everybody and be done with it. That is such a weird controversy to have in 2018. The Le'Veon Bell deadline is
looming
20 minutes away. Certainly don't think he's showing up anytime soon. It's McNeil and Parkins on the Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Lots of time for Roethlisberger. The check down to Bell, almost always a good option. Does he go out of bounds? No whistle, no signal. And it's a touchdown for Pittsburgh.
Who is he?
So that was a highlight of Roethlisberger to Bell. A couple of things in there. Bottom of the hour on the Score was brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Chicago Wolves currently have the number 1 and 2 scoring leaders in the AHL. Be there Saturday as the Wolves host Iowa at 7 and Sunday at 3 against Manitoba. Enjoy discounted concessions and free parking this season, courtesy of the 2019 Kia Sportage. So Adam Schefter saying at the 4 o'clock Eastern deadline, Le'Veon Bell not expected to report. And Brian Billick comped Mitch Trubisky to Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah, on a diet. Physically, they don't have much of a resemblance. Ben is a much larger man. He's a little bit taller, I think. And
he is.
He's also much, much thicker.
Stronger arm, too. Like I think of Ben Roethlisberger as one of the first guys I think of like a great deep ball.
Yep, I agree. And, same thing.
Yeah, so that one surprised me. It'd be great.
And Ben can extend plays, but not for the same reasons.
Right.
Mitch Trubisky has very quick feet. Roethlisberger's just a horse, and he's hard to bring down. I picture Roethlisberger, you picture the deep ball. I picture guys hanging on him and him slinging it to one of his running backs.
Yeah, it's both. It's the ability to, like, he extends plays, like you said, guys bounce off him, or he's bigger than a lot of linebackers.
Yes, he's a large human.
So they'll bounce off him or hang on him, and he doesn't get brought down, and... But he's a Hall of Famer, and he's a tough SOB.
Yeah,
both of those. It'd be amazing if that's how Trubisky's career ended up. I ask just because I don't have a great comp for Mitch either right now. I don't love the Alex Smith comp that so many people are using because I think that Mitch has a much higher risk tolerance.
I think Alex has more limitations.
Yeah.
More of a game manager. Trubisky is developing as something more than that.
And I get it. They're both accurate. They're both mobile. But Alex Smith is so hesitant to take shots down the field. And Trubisky, you know, his high school nickname was Favre. Like, he sees himself as a playmaker gunslinger way more so than Alex Smith does.
Gunslinger, there
it is.
I
love that term.
Do you?
Yeah, so the Romo comp isn't terrible. And I think Romo's one of the most underappreciated players of my life watching football. I thought he was awesome. And the Cowboys would just consistently be .500
right,
because they had terrible talent and terrible coaching around him.
Injuries really got in the way of him ever finding his true potential.
And then some just devastating late season or playoff meltdowns. Some that were his fault and some that weren't.
Texter says, how about a right-handed Steve Young? Not terrible. Steve Young ran it a lot more angrily, though, when he wouldn't have a problem dipping the shoulder and trying to run over a strong safety. Mitch is more about self-preservation, which is the smarter thing to do.
Which, I mean, it could be just the evolved version of Steve Young.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you've learned more about it. The value of quarterbacks have gone up. We know more about injury replacements and that sort of thing. I mean, I've seen the Steve Young comp. I'll take that one.
How about Donovan McNabb? That's from Jim in Lockport. Thank you, Jim. That's not bad.
Mitch is a better runner than McNabb. McNabb was a pocket passer.
McNabb was pretty good on the move, too. He had some pretty productive, he had some productive seasons as a rusher early in his career.
Like the 99, 2000, 2001 era McNabb. Yeah, because I remember, I mean, McNabb, I always thought of him as good, not great. Like a guy who, good team around him, really good coach.
And you have Mitch Trubisky more than that right now? I don't.
No, not right now.
Okay.
No, I think most people do comps based on like ceiling of what they can become. At least that's how I think of it. Because, okay. I mean, he's what? How many games in? The Bears are 9 games in and
yes.
12 last year. So he's played 21 games in the NFL. It changes every week in terms of what he is right now.
I look at body type. I look at throwing styles. I look at mobility, ability to read a defense, all of those things. But body type is a part of it, too, for me, when comparing athletes to other athletes, regardless of their position, their body type.
Eli says over 600 rushing yards for McNabb's second year in the league. So, yeah they're early
McNabb.
Yeah, he
can run, man.
Yeah, no, that's certainly more of a runner than I remember him.
You know, he had to run at Mount Carmel because he had Jay Zawoski chasing his ass
down. That's true.
Yeah.
That's an intimidating thing for any man.
A little 55 will get you. He'll get you and knock you into the dirt. He's Zawzer. So, Le'Veon Bell not showing up at camp.
Yeah, well, I mean, do you think I'm overstating it to say that it's one of the most fascinating contract impasses in professional sports history?
I don't think that's overstating it. I haven't given much thought to it, but certainly in the NFL, it's odd when somebody passes up that type of money. I'm struggling to remember what the Steelers' final offer was this summer.
I reread a bunch of it today.
It was in the 60s, right?
So I reread a bunch of the stuff today because I knew we were going to talk about it.
In the 60s.
It was a 5-year, $70 million deal.
$70 million.
But what the point from Le'Veon Bell's people was that it was, quote-unquote, only $17 million fully guaranteed at signing. And that wasn't much more than 1 year on the franchise tag that was $14.25 million that he could have if he would have played it this year. So he looked at that as all fluff and no real substance in terms of the guarantees.
By not reporting, and I was reading about this last week, and you know how we are with numbers, and I'm saying we because you're probably the same
way.
You get dizzy after 30 seconds of it. But he is in line by sticking to his principles here and nothing else. He's in line for potentially a slight increase next year if they wind up doing that that transition deal. I don't know. I don't get quite all of it.
Well, some of the reporting on it was actually wrong, and it looks like Le'Veon Bell's camp also did not know some of the things. Like if they tag him again,
it's a transition tag because he's already been franchised twice.
But he didn't sign the second one. So there was some debate on whether or not they issue the tag, is that like issuing it a third time or is it like issuing it a second time?
I see.
And it counts as the third time because he's actually already accrued the 4 years of service in the NFL to be a free agent. And so that would be the quarterback tag, which is like $25 million guaranteed, which no team in the NFL will do. Mm-hmm. So he'll be a free agent. But what I think is just so interesting about it is he didn't want to be paid as a running back. He wants to be viewed as a positionless player because he's the second best receiver on the Steelers also behind Le'Veon Bell or behind Antonio Brown. And he says, he's like, they were going to use me 400 times this year. And so anyone talking about, he could have reported after the trade deadline or he should have reported today, that would have been idiotic. To miss training camp and still risk injury, like he had
without a deal.
That's what I'm saying. Without a deal, and to sign the tag to get his $6 million or whatever's left on it, like it's a huge gamble. He might not make the money back ever, and it pisses his players off and the fan base off, and all of that. So it's a gamble. But the only logical conclusion for Le'Veon Bell once he decided to sit out in fear of injury was to actually sit out the entire season until he got his deal.
And he's doing that. And the losers are, I don't know if Steelers fans would say they're losers right now. They seem to be doing just fine without him, as silly as that sounds. As a runner, James Conner has been more than adequate as a replacement. He's been one of the most productive running backs in the entire league this year.
Yeah, that hasn't helped Bell's value.
No, it sure hasn't. And his Bell's teammates have turned on him, some of them publicly turning on him. And that's not a very forgiving town. That's a blue-collar town. I would expect Steelers fans to, more of them than not, be waving the middle finger at number 26 today as he doesn't report.
And then when he comes into town next year, he'll be booed, but he'll be beloved by whatever city signs him because he's a great player.
I feel cheated. I love watching the best at what they do, and he certainly is among them. I think he's the most exciting player in the game at his position, and it sucks not being able to see him at this, very early age in his career, and just going to have to wait until next year. But we'll live without it. At least LeSean McCoy had a big game this past week for a change. I enjoyed that.
I know you're a big fan of his work as well.
I do love his. Oh, give me a jump cutter. Oh, I like jump cuts.
Kendall Gill on the show at 4, Hub Arkish at 5. People want to react to the Trubisky comp conversation. And I got a PSA for a group of Bears fans that I think are missing the forest a little bit, or not really enjoying this season as we go. So I want to talk about that coming up on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Oh, oh, oh. O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.